This is the Hot Corner on the Sports Superstation with your host, Ryan McKenna.
Hi, and welcome back to the Hot Corner. I'm Ryan McKenna, and alongside me is our senior baseball analyst here at Sports Superstation, Adam Connolly. Welcome again there, Adam.
Thanks, Ryan. How are you doing?
Great, thanks. Great. Alrighty. So today, folks, we will be previewing the American League and National League Central Divisions. These two divisions carry the most teams out of all the divisions in baseball. Six teams in the National League Central and five teams in the American League Central. Do you find this would be tough for those teams to get up in the standings? Like, how does this pan out?
Well, in the AL, it wouldn't make a whole lot of difference because, I mean, the American League East, you know, has five teams as well. The Central would be a little bit difficult. I still don't really understand why baseball would have six teams in the NL Central and only four in the American League West. I mean, you think, you know, teams have switched leagues before with the Brewers switching over to the NL and whatnot. You think they could send, Houston or one of those kind of westerly teams to the American League. But anyway, it definitely would make a difference. I mean, you're battling five other teams to make the playoffs rather than, you know, four or even three like they're in the AL West. So it definitely would be a bit of a disadvantage, I think.
So there you have it, folks. We're ready to go, and we're going to start it off with the American League Central. The Minnesota Twins enter the 2010 baseball campaign coming off their first playoff appearance in two seasons. The Twins, who beat out the Detroit Tigers in a tiebreaker game on October the 6th, not to mention an unbelievable ball game that went to extra innings, they got beat out by the New York Yankees in the first round of the playoffs. The Twins encountered injury problems down the stretch last season to one of their top players, and the Canadian Justin Morneau. Morneau also was unable to play in the first round of the playoffs against the Yankees. Adam, should the injury suffered by Morneau at the end of last season be any concern to fantasy owners this season, or do you see him having a stellar campaign?
In situations like Morneau, it's a little bit difficult to, you know, to get a read on sometimes. You know, any time a player finishes the year on the DL, you know, doesn't come back at all, it makes you a little bit worrisome. You know, someone last year, someone like Grady Sizemore, who was hurt, or Carlos Beltran at least came back towards the end of the year to show, you know, that they had some health. So I'd be a little bit worried with Morneau, not too much. I mean, I think he's definitely still one of the upper echelon first baseman baseball. You know, if you're starting a new draft, I'd still take him high. You know, maybe not as high quite as, you know, Pujols and Fielder and Howard, some of those guys. But I wouldn't let the injury worry me too much. He might drop down a peg or two, but, you know, he'd still be up there.
Sounds good. The 2009-2010 offseason seemed one addition to the Twins club. J.J. Hardy, who had a stellar 2007 and 2008 season before struggling with Milwaukee last season, batting only .229 before being demoted to AAA Nashville. Will Hardy struggle again in 2010, or will he be beneficial to the Twins?
I think he'll probably be beneficial. I don't think he's going to be any kind of, you know, he's not going to be a top 10 shortstop by any means, I don't think. But, you know, sometimes guys like Hardy, who, you know, have shown in the past, they have the skills to, you know, to produce. Sometimes the change of scenery is all a player like that needs. So I would expect a bit of a bounce back. I don't know whether he'll get back to his season high numbers there that he had a couple years ago, but I would expect to be better than he was last year.
One more key about the Minnesota Twins entering the 2010 season is their new field, Target Field. The $522 million stadium marks the start of a new playing era for this Twins club, who have played indoors at the Metrodome for quite a few years now. This move to a new stadium, however, is something that opposing managers, such as Ozzie Guillen, won't miss. Guillen says, "I would love to help rip that stadium down. There aren't a lot of good memories for me." Hey folks, the stats don't lie either. The White Sox, for whom Guillen manages, posted a 3-15 record at the Metrodome in the last two seasons. I guess a little side note of a question, Adam. Will playing outdoors hurt the Twins?
I don't know if playing outdoors necessarily would hurt them. I think losing the Metrodome might be a little bit of a disadvantage. I mean, playing in the Metrodome for years in that white ceiling, you know, it's really hard for a lot of players to pick up pop-ups, fly balls, that kind of thing. So the Twins had an advantage there for sure, you know, with being used to it compared to teams coming in, you know, that hadn't played in it so much. They'll lose a little bit of the advantage there, but I don't think it would be a big deal.
Sounds good. Speaking of those Ozzie Guillen-managed White Sox, they are next up on our teams to preview. The Chicago White Sox posted a 79-83 record last season while battling injuries and lacking offense throughout a large part of the year, not to mention Guillen ripping his team for watching football. I believe that was back in September. Anyways, the 2009 White Sox definitely had their ups and downs, starting with the July 23rd perfect game by Mark Burley, and the somewhat minus not getting Jake Peavy to pitch for them until mid-September after he was acquired at the non-waiver trade deadline. The White Sox also made a surprising move during the 09 season, coming from a Jays fan that is, when they took on Alex Rios' humongous contract, picking him off waivers from the Jays. Rios performed the way many Jays fans expected him to, batting 199 and only getting 9 RBIs in 41 games. There's a lot of question marks for the White Sox squad, Adam. What is your biggest?
I'd say the biggest one, you know, would have to be their offense. I really like their rotation. I think with a healthy PB along, you know, in there with Danks and Floyd and Burley, I definitely think they got a very solid rotation. So they're just going to need some offense to back that up. They have some players there that can produce. You know, a Carlos Quinton, if he's healthy, can be a top slugging outfielder in the league. Of course, he's battled injuries throughout his career, so that's always a big question mark. And a guy you mentioned like Rios, you know, definitely seemed to be a guy that was up and coming. You know, going to be one of the next, you know, very good players in the league a couple of years ago with Toronto. So don't really know what happened to him last year, but if he can bounce back anything close to the numbers he had with Toronto, then you know that'll up the White Sox offensive potential as well.
That was exactly my biggest question as well, because in 2009 they ranked 21st in the Major League Baseball for average, sitting at 258, while their on-base percentage sat at 329. Like you said, Rios needs to perform better, or someone like Paul Konerko. Mm-hmm. They really need to be leaders for this squad and help their offense.
Yep, I agree.
Detroit Tigers. Well, Adam, I know whenever I played for you, we never had a collapse like the Tigers did in 09. Okay, maybe we did with the whole elimination tournament going to the Nationals and whatnot, but hey, that's a story for another day, folks. I know we both get upset whenever we talk about that. So anyways, the Tigers blew a 7-game lead in the AL Central, and then not only did they blow that lead, but they lost in extra innings to the Minnesota Twins in the tiebreaker to see who would win in the division. The Motown train just kept on going down for the Tigers, as fan favorite Curtis Granderson was dealt to the New York Yankees, and so was Edwin Jackson, although he got sent to the Arizona Diamondbacks. The three-team trade saw four decent players return to the Tigers. Adam, of those four players, Max Scherzer, Daniel Schlereth, Phil Cook, and Austin Jackson, which one will make the biggest difference for the Tigers this season?
I'd say of those four, all four will probably be on the big league squad. I think Scherzer is the biggest guy that they got. I think he's actually probably an upgrade over Jackson. He's had a little bit of injury history, but I think his potential is more so than Jackson, and he's cheaper as well. So he's definitely the prize of the players they got back in those deals. So if he can, if he can put himself right in the rotation behind a guy like, you know, Verlander, then, losing Jackson for sure shouldn't hurt too much. I don't know whether Austin Jackson would be able to, you know, replace what they've had from Grandison in the last couple of years. He's a fairly solid prospect, but of those four, Scherzer should be the guy that they're going to rely on the most.
And Scherzer is a very good fantasy pickup from what Adam was saying. I had him in one of my fantasy leagues last year, and he performed quite well. I'm just going to keep the questions coming, Adam. At the age of 33, Adam Everett will be back at shortstop for the Tigers. He only batted .238 last season. Do you see a prospect coming up this season and potentially showing us some young talent, or do you think a trade is imminent for a shortstop? Better yet, do you think they should just leave it?
They don't really have a shortstop prospect. Is the problem with Detroit. They got Scott Sizemore as a prospect coming up, but he's going to play second base, replacing Polanco. So I think Everett will stick around. Everett's never been known for his bat. He's always been one of the best glove men at short in the major. So he's there for his glove anyhow. So I think that they'll stick with him to get his defense, and if they get any kind of offense out of him at all, that's just kind of icing on the cake.
Right on. The Kansas City Royals. In 2009, the Royals did not have too many bright spots. The 09 Royals were expected to take everyone by surprise, much like the Tampa Bay Rays did in 2008. This, however, did not happen. The Royals were pounded with injuries to many of their starters, including Alex Gordon, who was again injured this spring training, and there is talk that he will miss opening day. Mike Aviles, a standout in 2008, But he struggled in 09, batting 183 before Hyman Tommy J surgery in May. Also struck by the injury bug were Coco Crisp, who batted only 228, Jose Guillen, the Royals' highest paid player at $12 million, Gil Mesh, Brian Bannister, and Kyle Davies. In the offseason, the Royals acquired Chris Getz and Josh Fields from the White Sox, while giving up Mark Tian in the process. But the Royals' catchers last season, John Buck and Miguel Olivo, will not be coming back, while 08 offseason acquisition Mike Jacobs was released. Through all this, we forgot to mention the Kansas City Royals produced this AL Cy Young Award winner in Zach Greinke. He went 16-8 in 2009 and had a 2.16 ERA in 229 and a third innings of work. Adam, this will probably secure the Royals a good chance of winning once in every 5 days with Greinke pitching. So how did the Royals succeed? Do they just keep on letting their prospects go and flourish? Or if you were general manager of this club, how would you approach things?
Well, if I was general manager of the Kansas City Royals, it would be a pretty difficult position to be in. They just, you know, with the resources financially and whatnot, they just don't have, you know, they're one of the bottom teams, I guess, in payroll. They just don't have a lot of, they don't have a lot of money to spend. In the past, the money they do have to spend hasn't been spent all that wisely, as you mentioned, with, you know, giving $12 million to a guy like Jose Guillen. This was not good allocation of resources. I think that all they can do is just continue to try to draft and produce their prospects. That they just don't have the money to go out and sign the big free agents. They do have a few, you know, a few good prospects coming up. Their farm system for a team, as bad as the Royals has been, is not that great. But they do have a few guys coming up now, so hopefully they'll be able to turn it around a bit. The Central has never been a real powerful division. They, you know, throughout, it's a fairly solid division, yeah, but not a lot of, you know, upper echelon teams. So they should be able to compete, but they just don't have the players to do so now, or probably for the next few years at least.
So we won't be seeing them in the playoffs anytime soon, is what you're trying to say.
I would be very surprised if they were even close to make the playoffs for the next couple of years.
As would I. I'm going to be honest with you, Adam. The Cleveland Indians were my biggest surprise around at the MLB last season. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, somewhat.
Okay, so in 2007, the Indians were a team to contend with, as they were only one win away from a World Series berth. The team had since lost a lot of key guys. CC Sabathia left in 08, Cliff Lee and Victor Martinez left last year. They fired their manager Eric Wedge en route to a 97-loss season. Not to mention standout center fielder Grady Sizemore only played 106 games. Adam, they signed Maniac to become their new manager, but will this really make any difference?
He's not a bad manager. I don't think it's going to make a whole lot of difference as far as wins and losses, at least this year.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, they were so close in 07 and went away from beating Boston, making the World Series, and, you know, the way they were playing, they very well could have won it.
Yeah.
You know, which is unfortunate for them because of the extra money they would have got, you know, for making it a little bit further and having more home games and the TV and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, like you mentioned, losing guys like Sebastian Lee and Martinez, I mean, teams just can't afford to lose players of that caliber, you know, and compete. They did get some decent prospects back. I don't think they got a great package for Lee or Martinez, for that matter. They got a few decent guys, but nothing, you know, real standout. So I think the Indians are definitely got a long road ahead. They'll be down with the Royals, I think, for the next couple of years at the bottom of that division.
Sounds good. Now, we forgot to mention, whenever we were previewing the Twins, about Joe Nathan. There's a lot of talks around Kier Wood and a potential trade to the Twins if Joe Nathan does opt for Tommy John surgery. Adam, is this trade a real potential? I know it would be a good salary dump for the Indians, as they are rebuilding and will be near the Royals for a while now. But would a trade like this make sense to you?
I think Cleveland would love to do it. Like you said, getting rid of Wood's contract, you know, saving some money, something Cleveland certainly would like to do. I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense for the Twins. Wood is overpaid. He's not a bad pitcher, but he's not, you know, he's not as dominant as he used to be, even when healthy, back with the Cubs, of course. And the Twins, it's unfortunate for them with Nathan, for sure. I mean, this guy's arguably, he's one of the best closers in the league, probably top three in my opinion. So to lose a guy like that, especially with the Twins, who are another team that don't have a high payroll, losing one of the high-paid guys hurts. But, you know, Minnesota obviously seem to be able to, you know, get around it. I would assume that they'll at least at the beginning of the year, we'll try with, you know, a couple of guys on their own team. Like you mentioned, when talking to the Twins last year, Morneau missed the last month or more of the season, and they still made the playoffs. People forget MVP Joe Mauer missed the first month of the season. Yeah. So the Twins are just the team you almost shake your head at, no matter what happens. And they seem to be able to bounce, you know, bounce back. So I would be surprised if they'd go make a big trade, especially for a guy like Wood, who's pretty pricey.
Yeah, exactly. What is the latest on Joe Nathan? Is he going? Do you think he'll opt for Tommy John surgery?
I think he's going to have to. I think the plan was to wait a couple of weeks and try to throw and see what the pain level was like and see if he'd be able to play through it. But I think that he's going to have to go for the surgery, and I would assume that a decision would be made very soon, because obviously if they wait too long, then you're looking at not only missing this year, but missing in part of the next season with recovery. So I think it's probably in Nathan's best interest just to go ahead and have the surgery, you know, throw this year away and hope to be able to bounce back. I mean, he's 35 years old, so, you know, it's never a good thing to be getting up there in age and have the surgery. But at the same time, Billy Wagner had his surgery there a couple of years ago, and he bounced back pretty well last year. So, you know, it's definitely not a career-ending thing. So I would suspect he'll have the surgery, and, you know, that'll be it.
Right on. That's it for the American League. Moving on now to the National League Central. The St. Louis Cardinals are coming off their first playoff appearance since 2006, in which they won the World Series. They won the NL Central last year by a large margin, 7.5 games to be exact. Albert Pujols won his second straight NL MVP award, having an exceptional season, batting .327 with 47 home runs and 135 RBIs. Not to mention another surprising statistic to some, as he stole 16 bases in 2009. That led the team, folks. 2009 also seen a second and third place finish in Cy Young voting with Chris Carpenter and Adam Wainwright, respectively. Other offseason highlights of the Cardinals include re-signing Matt Holliday to a 7-year, $120 million contract. Mark McGwire came on board as hitting coach for the Cardinals while also admitting to steroid usage. And the Cardinals signed starter Brad Penny, who is coming over from the Giants. Of these three highlights from this past offseason, Adam, could you possibly break all three of them down and maybe give an insight into the Mark McGwire situation?
Sure. I think with Holliday, it's not surprised that he re-signed. A little surprised at the money he got, just because there didn't seem to be a whole lot of teams out there to get him. Scott Boras pulled off yet another miracle where, you know, he seems to be able to get teams to bid against themselves. You know, if the price came down a lot, I'm sure a couple teams might have jumped into the mix. Yeah. But the Yankees kind of said off the bat that they weren't going to be interested. The Red Sox made a little bit of a push early, but then once they signed Lackey, you know, they knew they were going to be out of the mix. So there really weren't any teams left to give big bucks to Holliday. So I think that they overpaid to get him, considering that, you know, there was no one else really up there looking to pay that kind of money. But at the same time, Holliday did have a good year. Once he got to St. Louis, he struggled with Oakland, but, you know, that's a pretty big stadium to be playing in. Holliday's numbers in the National League for his career are pretty good, so I think it's a pretty good signing. Nice to have some protection with Pujols. Of course, it's going to mean Pujols, you know, if they're going to give $120 million to Holliday, what are they going to have to give Pujols here in a couple of years? It's going to be pretty wild. But anyway, hopefully they'll be able to bring him back. The Brad Penny signing, I think, was a decent signing to bring him on. I think giving him, I believe it was $9 million they gave him, I think was a little bit more than was needed. He's definitely a National League guy. He had some pretty good years with the Dodgers. He was terrible with Boston last year. And then, of course, when he went back over to the NL at the end of the year, he was not too bad. So, anyway, I guess there's some finish things off with Penny is that, Smoltz went to St. Louis last year. Dave Duncan was able to turn him around after he had his poor start with Boston. So I think Penny can put up some big numbers. I just think they might, again, kind of like Holliday, I think they might overpay him a bit. As for Mark McGwire, I really don't know what to say about that. I was kind of surprised to see him brought on. He was never, a terrific hitter. He was a power hitter. He never hit really well for average. So aside from the fact that I know he's close friends with Tony La Russa, I was pretty surprised to see him brought on. So as far as that goes, I really don't know what to say. That's kind of going to be an interesting thing to wait and see.
Exactly.
See how that goes.
Adam, could you remind me again how many years it's been since the Cubs last won a World Series? Is it at 102 years?
It's over 100 years.
Oh, jeez. Nonetheless, more than you and I have been alive together. It looks as though the Cubs were on pace for a great 2009 after making the playoffs in consecutive years, not to mention 97 wins in 2008. That, however, did not happen. Countless injuries from pretty much everyone on the squad, and not to mention a frustrated ace in Carlos Serrano, who only won 9 games for the Cubs in 09. Oh, and how could we forget about Milton Bradley? Our good buddy, the left-handed hitting Bradley, signed a 3-year, $30 million contract in the 08 offseason before getting run out of town by fans and the media. All this led to GM Kim Hendry suspending Bradley for the rest of the regular season, and then he was dealt to the Mariners for Carlos Silva. Carlos Silva?
Come on, man!
The only other notable losses and additions for the 2010 campaign are the loss of often injured Rich Harden, Canadian, and the Cubs received Marlon Byrd for Harden. Byrd will fill the hole that Bradley left. This seems like such an easy question, Adam, but what do the Cubs possibly need to do to win that World Series that the lovable losers really need and that the fans really want?
I'm not sure what they're going to do. I don't think that they're going to do it anytime soon. Yeah. They have a decent team on paper, but they just have so much big money tied into so many players. They're still paying some of Bradley's deal, I believe, but even if not, or actually, I guess there was a swap of poor contract with Silva. Silva had huge money too, over $10 million a year, and he's no good at all.
No.
So, you know, the money they got to him, the money they got to Rafael, or Alfonso Soriano, who's making big bucks and done very little the last couple of years. Derek Lee's making big money, Aramis Ramirez, and all these aging veterans have all this big money tied up, so they just don't have the resources or the prospects to, you know, to fill the holes and pick up players they need. So it's going to be a struggle for the Cubs. I think they'll be, you know, they're definitely a solid team. They should finish over 500 and whatnot, but I just don't think they're going to be in the running really to win the World Series.
Right on. The Milwaukee Brewers have one huge question entering the 2010 season. Who's going to pitch? The Brewers were hurt by that poison of a starting rotation of theirs that led them to 27th-ranked earned runs against average statistic. Giovanni Gallardo was the team's best starter as he had the lowest ERA on the team with 3.73, but also posted a 13-12 record. The Brewers did acquire Randy Wolf, the veteran southpaw coming over from the Dodgers. Adam, with such pitching uncertainty, what should the Brewers do?
Well, hope that some of the young pitchers coming up can fill the void, I guess. I really like Gallardo. I think he's a guy that's going to turn into an ace, so I think he's only going to get better. Wolf had a very good year with the Dodgers. Never liked spending big money on a guy coming off a career year because you never know if he's going to take a step back. But, yeah. You know, Wolf is a fairly solid pitcher, but as you mentioned, after that, they don't have a whole lot. So I'm really unsure what they're going to do. Just hope that their pretty solid offense can slug out some runs and they can win some games that way, I suppose.
Exactly. J.J. Hardy, whom we've talked about earlier in this show, is gone. But Alcides Escobar, the 6'1", 108-pound shortstop, is going to be stepping into that shortstop position very nicely. At the age of 23, he batted .304 in 38 games last season. Should we expect similar results from this kid again this year?
Yeah, I think we might. It was a small sample size, obviously, with Escobar last year, but he's been a fairly big-name prospect coming up the last couple of years. So, again, he's not going to slug too many home runs and whatnot, but he should have a decent average and steal some bases and have pretty good glove work in the infield. So I think he'll be a solid addition to the team.
Right on. Probably the quietest team during this past offseason, acquiring nobody and losing only 3 players. The Cincinnati Reds are a tough team to judge going into the 2010 season. The team finished 2009 with a 78-84 record and haven't been over 500 in 9 years. Yikes. When you take a look up and down the Reds' projected 2010 lineup, Adam, you see names like Joey Votto and Brandon Phillips that really stick out at you. Votto missed a large part of last season due to a mental illness, and as I mentioned Brandon Phillips' name, he batted .276 with 20 home runs and 98 RBIs. Should fantasy baseball owners expect good things from these two?
I really like Votto. I think another good Canadian kid, of course, but he gets things straightened around. He's got as much pop in his bat as a lot of players, so I think this is definitely going to be a breakout year for him. I think he can put up big numbers. Brandon Phillips, for terms of fantasy, is pretty solid as well. Second base is a tough position to get filled. So when you got a guy that's got the kind of power and pop that Phillips has, he's definitely a solid fantasy player. I think he's starting at the back nine of his career, but at the same time, he's still one of the top probably 6 or 7 second basemen that you could pick up.
All right, 2 teams left, folks. And let's try to sum up the 2009 Astros organization in one word. They stunk. Okay, that was stupid. But hey, it's been a long show, folks. Houston ranked only lower than 20th in three of the nine league batting categories, ranking 19th and up in all four pitching categories, and the fielding, we'll give them credit there. They were all right. When I look at their lineup, I see some potential, same with their starting rotation. All right, I lied. I see potential with Oswald and Wandy Rodriguez, and that's about it. If you talk to the Astros, any Astros fan out there, the first thing they'll tell you is that their farm system is corrupt and needs some serious attention. Adam, is it time to trade away guys like Lance Berkman, Carlos Lee, and Roy Oswalt for prospects, or do you think the Astros and their farm system will get stuff figured out by themselves?
If I was the Astros GM, I would strongly consider dealing off some veterans for prospects. Oswalt's been, you know, the face of the franchise for a few years now, but he slumped a little bit last year. Berkman and Lee, while still solid players, are, you know, starting to age a little bit. And as you mentioned, their farm system is just in disarray. They've tried to deal off so many players to make pushes for the playoffs the last few years. And they had some success making it to the World Series a few years back, losing to the White Sox there. But I think now is the time. You know, they really need to try to restock and then start fresh.
Our last team of the day, and what a pleasure it is for us to talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates. Love these guys. That's a joke, by the way, folks. I think this is the only Pittsburgh franchise that has not succeeded in the last couple of years, with references to the Steelers as Super Bowl champs in 08, as well as the Pittsburgh Penguins being Stanley Cup champions in 09. The Pirates have been just fair, to say the least, averaging 66 wins over the past five seasons. Adam, is it just me, or did the Pirates been trading away all their good players they've had in the past decade? For example, Jason Bay, Xavier Nady, Nate McLeod. Is it just me, or are you noticing the same thing?
Oh, they absolutely have been doing that. They traded away their best players, and unfortunately for them, haven't been getting a whole heck of a lot in return.
Yeah. What do you do then, as Pirates? Do you just hope that your young guys like Andrew McCutchen rise, or what would you do?
That's pretty much all you can do. It's a kind of similar situation to Kansas City. You know, this is just a team that just doesn't have the resources to go out and spend a lot of money in free agents. So you kind of have to hope that you can build the best prospects you can. I don't think they got off to a good start with that last year, drafting Tony Sanchez fourth overall in the draft. They went the cheap route there. There's no doubt about it. They could have got a much, much better player. It would have cost them more money, but that's just the way the Pirates are, I guess, trying to pinch pennies, which, you know, in this economic climate, I can understand. But in terms of having success and keeping your fan base happy, Pirates have a lot of work to do. There's no doubt about it.
All right. So that's it for the National League, and that's about almost it for our show. So that wraps up our American League and National League Central previews. Thank you, Adam, for once again joining me.
No problem, anytime.
All right, so next week, folks, we'll preview the American League and National League East. Some big blockbusters, Roy Halladay from the Jays. The Phillies got Roy Halladay. Anyways, that's all going to be discussed on our next episode of the Hot Corner. I thank everyone for tuning in. We're going to lead you out now with a new single by Three Doors Down. It's called Shine. Have a good week, folks.
The Hot Corner is a presentation of Sports Superstation. This show was written, directed, and produced by Ryan McKenna. Editing and technical director is Matthew McKenna. Marketing department and assistant technical director is Mitchell McKenna. Engineer, Patrick McKenna. Senior baseball analyst, Adam Connolly. See you next week.
This is about to be history. Show you something you've got to see. Trust me, people will remember this day. Cause it's my time to shine. I know what could be mine. It's only in the line. So
shine.